The GAA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GAA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas, they get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
So we're going to do two football shows today. Keane and Conan are here, as usual. We're splitting out the Congress. Keane, you will be delighted with this. You're getting in, you're going to talk about football, and then you're getting the hell out of here.
So that's the way it should be, Willie. That's the way it should be.
And I am also conscious of the fact that some listeners are not interested in that politics side of it, and I don't really care about Congress and just kind of enjoy maybe the football side of it. So we're going to split the two podcasts out. So if this is the first podcast you're listening to, we will have another one, and Sean Kelly, former president of the GAA, is coming up on that one. So keep your eye out for the other podcast. It'll be out later on today as well. Right, Kerry are probably the big story coming out of the National League, and that they're 4 wins out of 4. That's kind of, new management wondering what they're going to do. Going away to, it wasn't Pierce Park, it was actually Tuam Stadium, a heavy pitch, and we know Galway aren't at full strength, but at the same time, it's a very impressive start under Peter Keane, results-wise.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, 4 from 4,
and not at full strength either.
Yeah, you literally can't do any better than 4 wins out of 4 games.
No, literally.
So probably one of the few times literally has been used properly on this podcast. And they've had a number of injuries. They're definitely not at full strength, particularly up front. So they've tailored their approach. Maybe they would have been playing that way anyway, even if they had all of their forwards available, but they've made themselves very difficult to beat.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Peter Keane is absolutely delighted with the start, and I'm sure the group of players are also gaining confidence from the wins they've been getting, particularly away from home.
Yeah, they're very aggressive in the tackle. Like, I mean, we talked about that about Dublin, but it was the same against Galway as well. But what was Tomás Flynn thinking? Lads, at that stage, Stephen O'Brien had nowhere to go. Like, he was like, I'm going to take on my man. It was Kearns who's been tormenting him all day. Little Kearns is turning himself into a right little so-and-so, isn't he? Like, when he went after Tommy Walsh then as well. Like, Tommy Walsh is a big, gentle giant. Don't be trash-talking Tommy Walsh. But anyways, so he takes on Kearns along the sideline. And you know yourself, now, Keane, you wouldn't have taken lads on down the sideline. Maybe Colin, you would have.
Nope.
Well, I definitely would have. But you know, like, you're running out a road. And you would have seen Tomás Flynn coming across, and you're like, I'm gone here. If I have to check back. And O'Brien just blatantly stayed going, and Flynn gave him exactly what he wanted. He took a black card, gave the free, and O'Brien had nowhere to go. Like, I mean, it was stupidity of the highest order from Flynn.
Yeah, it was a tired, desperate tackle is what I would
describe
it. Don't
go near him anyway. He was gone. It was a dead end.
Yeah,
O'Brien shouldn't have really kept going on that occasion.
Oh no, he was going down. Yeah, he was heading down a cul-de-sac. I mean, Flynn, even the angle he was at and everything, he kind of had nowhere to go, as you say. So Flynn just needed to make himself, you know, he had to just spread his arms out, you know, the size that he has. He should have been able to do enough to force O'Brien to take another play, and that other play brings him basically over the end line or into the keeper's hands.
Over the end line, that's it.
You know, he had no angle to play, so he dived in a bit foolishly. But Conan, as the resident defender now, has to tell us what he thinks of it.
But Conan's wing forward. He's a utility man, a bit like forward and back. Like, I mean, dropping back cover.
Ah, he's a better back though.
But this is the thing. It's actually funny enough one. During Galway's sin bin at the end of the first half, Kerry scored 5 points unanswered. And then when Flynn went into the sin bin at the end, they got 3. They got 8. They made hay when Galway didn't have that extra cover. Like, I mean, when you actually tried to put it into context how stupid Flynn was, when Galway had got themselves right, but Galway had gone one up at that stage, did they? It was back to a draw.
I think it was a draw match at that stage, yeah.
Yeah, after kind of a jammy kind of old goal.
Yeah, it was. I have no idea. I have no answer for you. I have no idea what he was thinking either. I just, as Keane said, it just seemed like lazy and tired, and it's like, I want this play ended, and this was the best way to do it.
Well, I think it's one of those situations where, spoken about it before, when the defenders are facing their own goal, chasing back. And that's what, even though O'Brien was, what I would say, was running down a blind alley, he did have Flynn chasing back towards his own goal. And that just incites panic. And defenders or guys that are not used to that are inclined to do daft stuff.
Yeah.
Like, playing football over the years, you always know, if you get inside, when you're getting close to goal I mean, defenders are lunging at you. They're doing it. Like, it's so much easier to sell a defender a dummy when you're close to the goals, because they're just in complete panic mode. Particularly yeah. if they're chasing back after you, you can nearly do whatever you wanted, and they nearly jump over the fence trying to block a shot that you're dummying. Like, and it's obvious you're not shooting. Like,
yeah.
So it's always an interesting one, because in soccer, getting to the byline is always this huge thing because everyone's running back like panicked. Do you know what I mean? It's seen as this big scary thing. They're at the end line. It's only a cross mid. It's not too much difference.
Yeah, and they can't score from there.
They can't score. They're just swinging it. But you're facing your goal, and you're obviously panicking. Maybe that was it. But there was one passage of play. It was between 42 minutes to 44 minutes, and I rewound it and I counted the passes. So there's 22 passes from Kerry. So they went from the right over to the left, over to the right to the left. Then they got into the 6 yard box, decided nothing on in here, came back out, went back over to the right under the stand, and it ended with Shane Enright kicking a bad ball at the goals. It curled, I think it stayed in play. But it was like, Jesus Christ, what kind of crap? Like, I mean, to pay in money and see that over back, and then a corner back. And like, Galway are terrible for this. This Sean Andy O'Callaghan, Duan, Wynn, all these lads are taken off up the field randomly and taken all shape off the game. And that's what the defensive systems kind of do. They try to put an awful kind of structure on the game. And you find out, you'll see off camera just your man win, and he's sprinting off up, and his man following him, and then he's just taken completely out of the game. It just makes for a terribly messy kind of game.
Yeah, I'd say Peter Keane was just angry at Shane Enright for shooting there and from where he shot from, and like, it's boring.
He had scored a brilliant one in the first half, yeah. So maybe he was getting.
And I know it's boring and sort of like it's hard to watch sometimes, but like that's probably exactly what they wanted to do. If Galway have everybody back, let's try this channel. If it doesn't work, bring it back out and try this channel and don't do anything stupid. And
Well, it's a modern game, and Galway didn't get a glove on them in that whole in the whole phase of play.
Yeah, exactly. Look, Kerry did what they had to do.
Yeah.
In that particular situation, they ended up probably wrong player shooting from a difficult position, but it was they'd kind of run out of ideas. But at the same time, the right thing in that situation was to come back out again and
go
unfortunately
back.
Recycle it all the way back out, probably to the halfway line, and try and start again. You know, it is very difficult to watch it at times, particularly when it's on a heavy pitch and it's windy and it's dire altogether. But players on the field have to make the calculation pretty quickly and decide, you know, they don't have a lot of time to make these decisions, and sometimes they make the wrong ones. That one from Enright was the wrong one, but Kerry were, I suppose, doing the right thing in terms of having to be patient and work the scoring opportunity.
They were very patient. A couple of interesting marks. Shane Walsh caught a mark that was from a free and tried to stop and look at the referee until the referee went, go on, you can't mark that, mate. And Tommy Walsh, like, this is obviously a fault of the new mark, in that the ball was kicked from the 45 and Tommy Walsh must have caught it between the 45 and the 21. Like, there's no way. What's the distance? 20 metres?
Like, it's supposed to be 20 metres.
So unless he was on the 21 catching that, it literally couldn't have been 20 metres. He was like 10 metres away, caught it and got the mark and kicked it wide. It was early in the game, but I just remember specifically seeing those two lines on the field and going, that's nowhere near 20. But anyway, that's not a big deal. Sean O'Shea started the game and finished the game. Very disappointed. I was talking on Thursday about how he could easily break down very soon, and he seems to me like a player who would win a Sigerson Cup and go home and have a can of Coke, or, well, he wouldn't drink Coke.
Chamomile
tea, and he'd go to the pool and have a recovery. He doesn't
foam roll for an hour.
Foam roll. But, like, I mean, that it's not the point. Even if you don't want to go out and drink, you should definitely spend the night celebrating with your friends, and maybe even the next day, because Sigerson is such an important competition, and it's such a bonding experience, and an experience where you make friends. And I think having him to line out was wrong. I think playing the full game was bloody wrong, even though he played well, especially in the first half, until maybe the legs got a bit heavy. But, like, I mean, I'm disappointed with Peter Keane, and I'll get him on the show, I'm sure, during the year, and ask him why he thought it was a good idea to give him that full, you know, that full game on that one.
Yeah, even just sitting in the stands watching the game, it would have been fresh. Like, you know, you just would have enjoyed sitting there watching it. Like, if you had went up to the, it took the weekend off, even better. But, you know, going along and not playing and just having that mental freshness more than anything, I didn't really understand why they played.
Yeah, you have to, I think, if you're trying to say, the look at it from both sides and say, okay, he's a very, very important player for Kerry. His form is really good. He's definitely ahead of all of the other guys he's playing against at the minute, just by virtue of the fitness and all the games, so he should be sharper. So you maybe try and take advantage of that. I personally think that it's sort of an accident waiting to happen, because these guys get too much football, and even if physically they don't break down, which I think they eventually do anyway.
Yeah,
but
it's a long year.
It's a long year mentally, and it's very hard to get yourself constantly up, you know, up to the pitch of it, to be at the level. And particularly Sean O'Shea is a bit of a machine in terms of just his effort level around the field. And he always seems to be fairly tuned in, but there is a breaking point for everybody. And look, I suppose we're just saying it because we think he's a great player. Don't want to see, you know, you want to see him at the peak of his powers later on in the year, rather than plodding around on a heavy pitch and chewing, playing a match that he probably didn't need to be playing.
Yeah, I'm strongly of that opinion. You'd love to have seen it, because it is a long year, and even if he breaks,
what's he actually played now? Is that's 4 games in 2 weeks anyway?
And seven in three or four weeks. Yeah, 7 in about 4 weeks.
It's a lot. That is a lot.
How are the even medical team not saying to Peter Keane?
But look, possibly
this is too much for this chap.
But you'd have to look at it and say maybe he's played 7 games. He mightn't have trained once. Yeah. I don't know.
I know, but the stiffness after a game. Like, I mean, the one thing in his favour, he's a student. So students are practically professional players in that they'll get in and get into a jacuzzi or do whatever he needs to do to properly recover. And professionals don't have any issues playing weekend, midweek. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, so like, in that regard, maybe he's okay. Because if he wasn't a student, I'd be saying...
Yeah, like, to me, the physical side of it, I would be less concerned about the physical rather than the mental side of it, of just being actually physically worn out from playing too many games, just psychologically, that you can just lose the edge a little bit.
Yeah, no, not now, but
yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah,
like,
down the line,
I think now he's probably in the thick of it. He probably was mad.
He loves
to play
it now. Yeah,
he's won a Sigerson. Now they're 4 wins out of 4. He's probably loving his football. He's mad for action. So I think that sort of enthusiasm is great. Management sees that and thinks he's mad to play, let's just play him. But I think sometimes you have to maybe try and protect players from themselves.
I think,
because
so that's
you have to sometimes see the bigger picture. Yeah. But hopefully it works out for them, because he's a very likeable player.
Very likeable player. Top class player. Tyrone are back in the mix. So they beat Monaghan at home. They got out of jail against Roscommon. Monaghan are in bother now after beating Dublin in the first game, going to lose their next three. Like, I mean, that's the one thing about Monaghan, especially over any other county, is the Cavan game isn't a gimme for them, because they're local rivals and they hate each other. And the last time Cavan were up in Division 1, Monaghan barely got over them, I think, by a point at home. So, like, I mean, Monaghan are in big trouble. Like, I mean, there's Monaghan, Cavan and Roscommon, probably two of that three are going to go. So it is interesting. But you had a piece on the website, Conan. So Monaghan got a black card. Do you know why, stupidly, we'll talk about Mayo and Dublin in part two, I stupidly stayed watching the dullest game ever, and I didn't even think to flick over to the Monaghan Tyrone game. I just got
And Monaghan Tyrone was actually probably the best game of the three we've spoken about so far.
I just
far,
had this Mayo Dublin one built up in my head, and I continued to watch crap instead of just flicking across. And it was only when it was too late by the time it flicked over. But anyways, so Monaghan get a black card in the first half to bring everyone back behind the ball. This is just before half time. Tyrone refused to attack them for 3 minutes, and then the whistle blew for half time.
Yeah,
brilliant.
The crowd were getting restless as well.
Even the Tyrone crowd are getting restless.
Yeah, and a flick to Mickey Hart and Stephen O'Neill. And Mickey Hart was sort of, he's not going to really instruct the players to go and attack, because Monaghan had every single, there's 14 players inside their own 45. And then Stephen O'Neill was standing behind Mickey Hart, shaking his head and gesturing to the pitch, like, you know, because...
As if Tyrone wants to talk about this anyway.
I know, but they were sort of like, this game's a farce now because of these tactics sort of thing. And they just kept the ball. Yeah, there was one stage that every single player was inside the Monaghan 65. So Niall Morgan had come up and they were all inside the 65, but there was no pressure on Tyrone either. Monaghan were just waiting for them. And then Tyrone actually got in anyway and had a shot from about 20 yards out. And
McShane with a wondrous effort up his
left. Completely ballooned him. He panicked then, because he saw these bodies around him and just hit it too fast. But yeah, they were happy just going back and forward. And
so I don't know who to criticise there. I wouldn't criticise Monaghan. Like, I mean, Tyrone have the extra man. Like, I mean, who's at fault there in that situation, really? Or is anyone at fault? Or this sin bin is Tyrone?
I don't think you can really blame anyone. Now, Monaghan took it. We've spoken about it. Monaghan tried every trick in the book to waste time when they had the man down. There was lads in the second half then. There was an injury. Kieran Duffy went down.
Yeah.
Now, harmless enough contact from Matty Donnelly. He lay down for about 6 or 7 minutes and wasted the rest of the time. So they had 3 or 4 minutes of Tyrone doing nothing with possession at the end of the first half, and then the start of the second half there was maybe 2 phases of play, and then Duffy got a knock and stayed down for the rest of it, and back on came the Monaghan man.
Well, they have to learn from this.
It's farcical.
The sin bin is farcical.
Well,
without the clock
you're genuinely getting to the situation where when a player gets injured he needs to be told get off the pitch.
Yeah.
We're playing on without you.
Yeah.
Whether you're seriously injured or not, get off the pitch. We're not interested. Play has to go on.
Well, that's a solution, or else just literally the clock being stopped, so that it's not serving you any purpose by going down. Like, I mean, you're not winning at anything. The clock is stopped, and then the I don't like the referee having all the control over extra time anyways, and because he'll always give a team a chance to draw it up, and sometimes that can be nice as well, like the hooter going off just as an equalising point is being kicked, like, I mean, just before it, and the point goes over, you'd nearly be saying, geez, that hooter's a load of shite.
it's such a hard, like, with Tyrone, what do you do? Like, they have an extra man, so you're thinking, right, go and punish Monaghan, but they don't want to lose the ball to them either, and they want to counter attack Monaghan, so Tyrone is 3 points up at the time.
Do they want to counter attack there, or they just kind of backs to the wall, let's just try and not let them in?
Though, it's an interesting one, because Tyrone are winning by 3 or 4 points at the time, so I mean, there's no onus on Tyrone to overly attack them. Tyrone were controlling the game. Now, it's a bit extreme for Monaghan to stick everybody back, but maybe they look at it and say, well, we were a man behind and we didn't concede a score. We conceded a shot from within the scoring zone that should have gone over the bar from McShane, which it didn't happen. But it's not a great spectacle. That's really all that it comes back to. I think that on the pitch, Monaghan just came up with, they had a clear plan, they enacted it, and Tyrone, when they were faced with it, didn't really engage with it. They kind of stayed outside well outside the screen. I mean, they were 20 yards, they were at the halfway line, and Monaghan were inside the 45. And
what's happened our game, lads?
Three Tyrone lads passing it around, like, it's just,
it wouldn't have happened in my day.
We definitely would have got it gone out, and we'd lamped it in,
and we'd have tried to kick the ball over the bar and win the game. Talking about Colin Boyle and wasting sin bin time, Colin Boyle took the umpire out. Jeez, I hope that umpire actually is okay. He looked like he was completely knocked out, and he was an elderly man as well. So I'd never seen an umpire taken out like that before.
He's a Derry umpire, yeah. Derry put up a picture of him that night, yeah, and he said Tom's grand and had his thumbs up in the changing room. He looked a bit shaken up now, in fairness.
Could get a cup of tea into your Tom there, maybe a pint of Guinness.
Very nice fellow as well. So it was tough to see him getting such a whack.
Yeah, it was actually, and it went down to him, and he wasn't a move out of him. Geez, that'd be terrible, wouldn't it? Yeah. Your mind starts wondering. But anyways, like, I mean, the Keegan sin bin, what a stupid thing for Lee Keegan to do. He knows better than that. You don't get away with stuff like that. I remember doing that in an under 21 All-Ireland final before, and thinking I was being smart and getting a yellow card early, and it just kind of rattling me. Like, I mean, it's stupid. You don't get away with that. It's obvious what you're doing. Like, and you try to act
put
innocent.
The hands up.
And very rarely you see a player doing that and actually getting away with it. You don't get away with it, and it's a clear black. And Keegan was just, you know, he was stupid. The Seamus O'Shea black or sin bin didn't look like a sin bin to me at all. He looked like he was falling down.
Really, really harsh decision.
I think Fenton got that for him by getting frustrated, and he was doing a bit of trash talking with Aidan throughout the game, which is unlike Fenton.
Well, I think I can see what happened there, because Aidan O'Shea gave him a right belt and decided ahead at the start of the game. Fenton didn't like it, and Fenton got a nice bit of energy every time Aidan O'Shea got the ball after that. I think that's fair enough. It's good to see stuff like that.
It is. Because Fenton has that kind of, like, you don't get to the level Fenton's at without being a fierce competitor. He didn't like that. He got that. Now, Fenton then dispossessed Aidan O'Shea with one of the best textbook tackles you'll ever see. That's terrible when that's blown. That's exactly what you teach. Now, he was from behind, but he put no contact on Aidan O'Shea's back. Flicked the ball away, which you're told to do as a child, and it was blown a free against him. The other end, don't think Aidan O'Shea even got a free against him when he tried to do the same thing Fenton did, went too high and ended up punching Fenton across the
face.
I don't think that was even a free.
No, I think Fenton had been given a free from before. He was sort of pulled back by Ruan, the midfielder, and just at the end of it then he got a clatter from O'Shea, so it was a kind of a double whammy for him.
And they're terrible rattles too, because you're totally not expecting them. Say, like, if you're in a row, you might be tensed up a little bit, but when you're completely relaxed and suddenly just you get this dunt in the side of the jaw, it's a terrible shock to your system, isn't it? Like, I mean, you're totally rattled. Anyways, I didn't get too many of them.
You were too quick, Wally. You were too quick.
The Black Death roll on, lads. When are we going to give the Black Death for Manus some credit? So now this is the two favourites to get out of Division 2 have been taken apart at home by Fermanagh. Kildare last week, and now coming back from 9-2 down against Donegal. Donegal down to 14 men. There's a lot of men. Carlow down to 12 men against Offaly. Might mention that in a while. There just seems to be Roscommon, Ulton Harney sent off. There seems to be it's because of the sin bin. Down to 14 men sounds, you know, but it just, there's black cards all over the place happening in these games.
It sounds better for those teams when they lose and then the report says 12 man Carlo lose, you know, as if that was the reason.
Two of them
it,
were sendings off, actually. One was a black.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. Like, maybe referees are just being told to clamp down on things a bit more. Like, and you would see some of the decisions over the weekend. You're like, as we're talking here, like, that's a bit harsh, isn't it? And they do seem a bit more trigger happy, the referees. I didn't see the Carlo sending off, but it does, when you see 12 man, it sparks of fucking indiscipline.
Yeah, no, it definitely does, especially when two were reds. But, like, I mean, Donegal have only won twice in 15 attempts at O'Donnell Park. Like, isn't it weird how these records work? Like, I mean, do you know, you just don't have a good record there. They're 9-2 up. This game should be over. Fermanagh outscored Donegal 9-2 in the second half. Sorry, my fault. But Donegal obviously were well ahead in the first half. And it's just weird how these records. And obviously Rory Gallagher over his former team, who his father got abuse on the sideline, who ended up didn't get abuse on the sideline. I'm sure the truth is somewhere kind of halfway along there, and Gallagher ended up leaving. So I'd say he got a lot of satisfaction in beating Donegal. Look through the Donegal team, it's no hurt. Like, it's still a shell of a Donegal team, but their promotion hopes are in big trouble now, Donegal's. Yeah, imagine Fermanagh in Division 1. Imagine how extremely defensive they'll go in there. If they think, well, we don't have the resources for Division 2, we play defensive in Division 3. I wonder, is it maybe Division 4 they might go out to try and win the game? Well, they have been winning the games, actually.
They're winning them. Donegal are in massive trouble. They have a huge, huge game now against Armagh next weekend.
Yeah.
And interesting.
That's at home.
Yeah, home. They're home to Armagh next weekend. And in the final league game, they're home to Kildare. On the basis of what we've seen,
they're not going back up.
They're not going back up because they'd have to win both of them and away to Cork. Okay, so you'd fancy them to win away to Cork, obviously, but yeah, to beat Kildare and Armagh at home is a big, big ask, because Armagh had a good win at the weekend. Confidence will be high for them going next weekend. That's a huge, huge game, and basically whoever loses next weekend between Armagh and Donegal is gone out of the promotion race and very much in the relegation race, as Division 2 always is. Fifth round is very, very important, and really, really interesting, because there's still I'd rule out Clare and Tip at this point in terms of the promotion race, but you have Donegal, Armagh, Kildare, Fermanagh and Meath all still very much in the hunt.
Yeah, definitely. Mentioning Armagh next week, Geezer has been given a 4-week ban, so he's going to miss 2 games. So it's understood that he's accepted his punishment. So we know, like, this is obviously an issue for McGeaney on the sideline. He has a bit of a persecution complex. He thinks the referees are out to get him. Like, I mean, you know from listening to him that he has that. So last year, he had a 12-week ban for an altercation with the linesman. So I can't, what was that linesman's name?
Joe McQuillan.
McQuillan. So he was sitting in the stands for a good bit of that. So he was only able to come down for when Armagh beat Tipperary. He's only able to go down and meet his players in the dressing room after the game. So, like, that's not ideal, and it's definitely something he needs to calm down on. Like, I mean, without going into the old statement that every manager since you were 8 tells you, the referee will never change his mind, like, Geezer needs to understand that, though. Like, I mean, he can't keep losing his head at linesmen. Like, I mean, it's just unacceptable, really.
Yeah, well, I think he needs to get a lend of Mario Balotelli's t-shirt that he wore when he, remember, the "Why All Was Me." I think he just needs to wear that under his gear the whole time, because, yeah, look, as you say, he does have a bit of a persecution complex, and yeah, it's not good. Like, if you're managing a team, you can't be picking up these bans. You're no use to your team then. And if you're getting involved with officials, I don't know, you're not really concentrating on the game, I would say.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I did mention Fermanagh beat Donegal at home, and we haven't had one. I threw it to you, and you talked about everything rather than give Fermanagh a little bit of credit.
Well, I actually was going to say, I don't think you wanted to give Fermanagh credit. No,
I'm going to give them credit because they have the best defensive record of it in all four divisions. Only conceded 35 points in 4 matches. That's very impressive.
Wow.
And in the top 3 divisions, only 2 teams are undefeated, and that's Kerry and Fermanagh. Like, they're undefeated playing this way, so they probably have their chests out now thinking what they're doing is genius.
It's just 2 fingers up to this podcast, really, isn't it? Yeah.
Just to you, one.
Carlo are second from bottom in 3, so at least there's one of them. I would have them down as 2 of the more defensive teams. So I have this down. This is another 100 club, lads, because I was giving out about the 100 performance club, and lads tweeting about it on a recent show, and I was like, when did this ever become something? So this is another 100 clubs. So the Kildare Times tweeted this out, and I think Ger McNally first had this stat. Historic moment there as Niall Flynn has just scored the fastest 100 points for Kildare footballers. He's reached 100 in just 23 appearances in league and championship. It's a record that stood for over 50 years and will take some beating. I'll take that 100 club. Like, that's, I mean, that's club. Impressive. It's a good club to be in. And he's, well, he's on the freeze, obviously, which is a big thing. But still, 100 points in 23 matches. You're averaging 5 a game. Still,
yeah, it's good going.
It's very good going from another free taker. Yeah, so Carlow lost by 3 points. We've already covered that. Louder, the big one. Carlow lost with only 12 men. Loud are top of Division 5, lads, after putting 5 past Sligo. They put 3 past Laois in the first half alone. So Wayne Cairns is their new football manager. He came up from the minors. He got the minors to the Leinster final. Now, they got hammered by Dublin. It was in 2017. But, like, it was an internal, like, all the fashion now is to get an outside manager. This was an internal one coming up from the minors. I was tipping Loud to go down. They lost at home to Longford in the first round. Like, all kind of, without being knowing the local scene in Loud, you're thinking, these ain't going great. 3 very impressive wins since then. And now they're top of Division 3 with the and now I want to talk to Wayne Cairns. See what he's all about.
Yeah, well, I actually heard him on a panel interview on the radio, and he was he's quite an interesting guy, so I'd say he'd
really
be quite interesting in terms of his coaching philosophy and whatnot.
Did he talk about his coaching philosophy?
Yeah, he did, and he's quite a pragmatic sort of a fella in terms of he wants his teams to be able to compete. It's not all about trying to play a certain brand of football. So I take.
Will he lose an interest there?
No. Make of that
what you will.
You took that one way. I took it the other.
We did. We took it.
make of that what you will, Woolian. I think you'd be a great man to draw that out of him. So okay. I look forward to hearing it.
Wayne Cairns next Thursday. I've heard it here first. We'll have to try and locate his number. Right, last one is Leitrim are still rising, lads. So they're 1-4, and this is an interesting stat. Sean McGoldrick had this. So Terry Hyland, he says, appears to have taught Leitrim how to win tight matches. They have come from behind behind at half time in all 4 games, and 3 of the 4 wins have come via injury time scores.
That's
an incredible stat now to turn, like, this is crunch time in matches that Leitrim now, I don't know how you fix that or how you, like, is this an anomaly or, like, I mean, it's just a coincidence that they're battling from behind, which would not be a trait of Leitrim. It's that confidence to know, and then to be scoring injury time winners. Like, I mean, I don't know. I just was very shocked at that. Like, I mean, that's a serious.
Well, it's fitness and it's composure. That's, you know, grinding out results like that is about physically being able to do it right
and
until
belief.
The end of the game, keeping your tempo high, and yeah, making the right decisions and seeing it through. Execution and decision making, along with fitness. But yeah, there's a lot of work goes into that behind the scenes.
That's
in terms
what I'm saying.
Of on the training field and talking about things near the end of the game and reassuring your players that when you're behind, it doesn't matter, you can still get something out of the game. You have to keep going, you know. So that's a massive thing for Leitrim, and it shows great character in the group.
I would say that's not an easily taught thing to a team who consistently in Division 4 and consistently loses. You know, that's difficult.
Yeah, and it sort of reinforces the idea that it's not like they're pissing through Division 4 and this is, you know, too easy for them. It's like they are still competing at their level, but they're winning games against teams who are at their level, which makes it all the more impressive. Like, you know, we're not talking about Derry winning 4 games from 4. We're talking about Leitrim coming from behind and getting the scores in the last minute against teams who could be beating them on another day, but they're not because of good coaching and good composure.
Yeah, interesting stuff. So Leitrim is still rising. Carlow looks to be falling. So they're the two. We've given Leitrim the rising hashtag this year. Right, okay, we'll be back and we'll talk about Dublin and Mayo.
I said, are you going to get up or are you going to stay in bed? I said, we have a game there about 3:30. if you wouldn't mind joining us. Didn't even start, like, didn't even go for the bag. Took his lie in, took his extra 5 minutes. It was like the snooze button. Hit the snooze button for another 5 minutes. Rolled out of bed. 1-7 that day.
Okay, so Dublin won 12, Mayo 7 points. Mayo scored 3 from play. Their starting six forwards scored 3 points between them. The stats on the wides was that they had 14 wides. Now, I wouldn't even, some of those wides shouldn't have even been taken on anyways. They weren't even wides that you'd say, you know, were bad wides. They were just pot shot. They were stupid shots. Like, I mean, this was, there's no point in over emphasizing this because we have to take it into the context. It's only the league. Mayo have been hammered in the league by Dublin before and have continued on to perform very well against them in Croke Park. We're taking all that into context, but we know Mayo are targeting this league. We know that they're looking to move well. We know they wanted to right the bad record they had against Dublin. Mayo were simply deplorable. Terrible, terrible, yeah. Terrible.
Yeah, it was an absolutely horrendous performance, really, for Mayo. By their standards, it was just desperately poor. Spoke earlier about the Lee Keegan black card. That to me just sums up the evening for them. It was just bad decisions, doing the wrong thing and just doing it consistently over the whole game. Even if you go through all of their players that played the match, practically none of them came out of the game with any great degree of credit. Fionn McDonagh, wing forward, did okay, ran around a lot. Did okay.
Battled hard. McCaffrey shaded. McCaffrey beat him though. Like,
of course, yeah. Ruan midfield got on a bit of ball and, you know, tried his best. You know, they all tried their best. Nothing to do with that. Rob Henley was good in goals. But aside from that, like, all of the rest of our players, you'd say, didn't perform to their level that you'd usually expect from them. Like, Harrison and Higgins got a bit of a chasing in the full back line. Paddy Durkin was taken off at half time. I don't know whether he was injured or not. But he wasn't doing well anyway up to that point. So just didn't happen for them anywhere across the field. Aidan O'Shea did okay in about the first 5 or 10 minutes and then just disappeared out of the game completely. Andy Moran had a poor game.
Yeah.
Wasn't in it. Doherty started okay but then faded. Look, they just didn't really have any platform in the game where they looked like they could hurt Dublin at all.
Yeah. They were carrying the ball too much.
Yeah.
Soloing and hopping, and you can't beat Dublin soloing and hopping. Because they're only going to track your runners. They're Mayo can put it up to them physically, but they're tracking your runners, and before you know it, you're at the Dublin 45, Dublin have 12 players inside it, and there you go. And Mayo used the kicking game so well against Tyrone. But against Dublin, the kicking game was non-existent, other than a few desperation ones into Andy Moran, or Doherty got one or two. They seemed to have no link man between the defence and the full forward line.
They couldn't get up far enough,
so they ended up carrying it, and Dublin are tracking the runs, and then they get up to that far end field and they completely ran out of ideas when they got up there. Like, I mean, the running game doesn't work again, and maybe this is the game has changed since Horan was over them last. But look, remember Lee Keegan's goals against Dublin in the All-Ireland finals. Running without the ball, coming on at pace onto the ball. He's not soloing the ball up the field.
Yeah.
That will not work against Dublin. I thought Mayo had fallen back into that Vaughan going up, Boyle, Keegan, soloing up the field. You're only slowing everything down against Dublin. Dublin are laughing at that.
Yeah, it's playing exactly into Dublin's hands, because Dublin will run with you, they'll take the ball off you, and then they'll saunter up the field and get their scores. And they actually want you to overcommit as well, because then they can kick it into that open space where they have serious pace up front.
That's the difference, because Mannion will always be out in front for those balls. Yeah. They left three in there, Moran, Doherty and Reap. They're not getting out in front.
No.
And the Dublin full forward line's marking you, full back line's marking you from the front.
Yeah,
so you have no target.
That's it, exactly that. The Dublin backs, in the full back line particularly, can afford to mark from in front because the ball is coming from too far away and it's coming too slow. That's where they needed a lot more from their half forward line. But it's kind of chicken and egg, because when Mayo turn over possession so badly, and then Dublin don't give it back to you easily. So you have to bring bodies back to chase runners and support runners. So then if you do turn it over, it's very rare that you have players that you can hit with that kick pass.
Yeah.
So it's sort of, you have to have maybe a couple of guys that are designated to hold up, but you need to have pace. If you have four players up front against Dublin, or three, you have to have pace. And most of the time it was Aidan O'Shea, Andy Moran, Brian Reap and Doherty. Doherty is the only player there with any real pace.
Yeah.
And he probably needed to be the one in the half forward line, maybe further out, to do the first link. And then maybe they should have tried to use Aidan O'Shea closer to goal.
O'Shea was dropping too deep.
He was.
Now,
yeah.
I thought Michael Meehan drew attention to this in the first 10 minutes very well. So he said off camera, that I think Andy Moore or somebody had the ball, and he says Aidan O'Shea's drifted to the back post, but he wasn't picked out. And then 3 or 4 minutes later, the play developed and Andy Moore got the ball under the Cusick side and gave a diagonal ball to Aidan O'Shea, who had drifted to the far post. Yes. And I was thinking, Jesus, this is a great... Because Kildare used this with Kevin Feely a lot, where he drifts in as the play develops. And I was thinking, right, so Aidan O'Shea is starting centre forward. When the ball goes into Moran, he's just drifting on into the edge of the square. So in actual effect, when Mayo are defending, he's playing centre forward. When they're attacking, he's going into the full forward. And I was thinking, this would be a great way to negate a sweeper and keep Dublin guessing. It happened twice and that was it. So I think, you know what I mean? It wasn't even a tactic, which I was really disappointed about. And Aidan O'Shea ended up just, because Keane O'Sullivan's marking you, and I've marked him, and Aidan O'Shea was just dropping back looking for handy hand passes because he didn't want to win hard ball because he couldn't get past Keane O'Sullivan. And then when your centre half forward is dropping that deep looking for the cheap ball, there's that huge disconnect there. What Aidan O'Shea really should have been doing is holding that 45 and trying to win ball further up the field. You know what I mean? And winning all, because they're hard balls to win. Yeah. It's no picnic there.
No, absolutely. We've spoken about it so many times before. You can drop back into your own half back line as a forward and get a number of possessions, and sometimes you just need to do that to get your hands on the ball.
Which is okay once or twice.
Which is okay at times, or sometimes you just need to take the ball off a certain lad because you don't know what he's going to do with it. But most of the time, what the team actually needs is players further up the pitch to provide that attacking option that you can kick. You can transfer the ball that bit quicker because when you don't have that, your entire attack is completely blunted because you have no territory. You just have no territory. And that's what happened, Mayo. That's why Mayo were taking these pot shots. And they were pot shots from just inside the 45, at the 45. Our lad, like, who was it, came forward? Boyle in the first half coming through. He broke the line. He's trying to kick a shot with his left foot, running away from the goals, under a bit of pressure, at full tilt. Never going to, like, it's a miracle. It would have been a 1 in 100.
And that was
shot
down as a wide, you see. It's not a wide. Yeah, exactly. It's just a stupid decision to
and
shoot from
the like of Brian Reap there. Probably skied 2 or 3 balls because, again, look, it's his first game at that real level against Dublin Croke Park, so you give him a bit of leeway and say, okay, he should learn and progress from that. He was snatching at it. He was under more pressure than he's used to, and he's trying to force the thing because they haven't had many opportunities to even get a sight at goal, never mind get a decent opportunity. So as soon as you get a half a chance, you're trying to pull the trigger, and it just doesn't work out for you.
But that's it. Without a kicking game, you're gone against Dublin. And we keep trying to emphasise that like Dublin have gone very defensive and there'll be 12 back. There'll 12 be back. Now, I used to say that Dublin like their full forward line won't come back unless they're chasing somebody. Like what Dublin do, and you can see because like teams like Galway and this, they attack from everywhere. So like the Dublin full forward line will actually drop goal sides and face their man. So like you're no way you're getting a jump on me here because they want to get a jump on you and create that extra man. You know what I mean? So Dublin are absolutely defensively solid, and I say it's come from conversations over and over again. Well, he's just taken off. Well, then stand goal side of him.
Stop him early.
Don't let him block his run. It'll be off the ball anyways, and you've got 5 yards on him when he decides to run. That you're not getting caught. Well, you know, you're not getting caught cold.
Well, I can remember the one of the years before we played Dublin, and it used to be a thing that used to hurt us was that the Dublin corner backs would just bomb forward, and I was thinking to myself, like, what are we supposed to do here? Because we either end up in our own defence for the whole game, chasing back after them, or we try and keep a bit of shape. And I remember us, in the week leading up to that game, basically just planning exactly as you're saying, that as a corner forward, I remember doing drills where it'd start on the end line, and the cornerbacks would have to get out, had to get out past the 21, and we could do whatever we wanted to stop them getting out past that 21. Right. It was just, lads, get yourselves tuned in, this is what it's going to be. I was booked after about 2 minutes for basically a Dublin cornerback, I think it was Alan Hubbard, flicked the ball over my head and went to run again. I just buried him. And I was like, there's no way. Like, and it sort of, we didn't win the game, but it didn't matter. You kind of were setting a certain
You were prepared for it.
So I think that's the sort of mentality that Dublin have, is that all their forwards are setting themselves up that, exactly as you say, I'm not going to get caught wrong side and have to chase this guy. Whereas if he goes to make a run and I put my hand in his chest or I stop him, if I do that 2 or 3 times, is he going to make 4 runs just to get out past me to make this aimless run forward? Maybe he will, but I'm going to make it difficult for him. So it's just that competitiveness all over the field, whereas most of the teams are just, their forwards are not as tuned in as that. They switch off for that split second and all of a sudden their man has gone off up the field and they're chasing after them, which takes up more energy than if you're just checking a guy running with him.
Yeah, that's the thing. And like, obviously, because the Mayo halfback line is running, carrying the ball, then you have Scully, you have Howard, or who was on the half forward line, Conor Callaghan, no, he was in the full forward line, who was Kilkenny, whoever was there, they end up tracking them, and then they're inside and the two midfielders are inside. You're not getting through Dublin when they've that many men back, so you're actually shooting yourself in the foot. That ball is moved through the foot a lot of the time, and you can remember, Keane, if you played in the half forward line, if the ball was kicked forward and you were a forward and you're supposed to be kind of tracking back, but it's gone on that far down, you might go, oh well, I won't really have to go back tracking, that's gone, I'll never catch up on that. So you could have a situation where Brian Howard and Scully see a good kick pass going down the field and going, oh well, I don't really need to get back now because that's gone well, you know what I mean, that's gone well
here,
and my man's not following it, so the two of us, he doesn't seem to be running and it's a good kick pass down there, I might just stay trotting around, and then Dublin don't have all those men inside there. Do you know, the kick pass is vital. We've said it with Tyrone, we've said it with how many teams to play against Dublin. You'll have nothing against Dublin without if you don't have a good kicking game. Like, you won't. And Kerry can prove it. Look at all the long balls they give in. You saw none of them from Mayo, and they had no Shea. Like, Kerry showed us some example, and Laois did in the Leinster final last year. There's potential weaknesses in there. What did we see from Mayo with regard to what we saw Kerry doing? Kerry just launched about five high balls down there in the first half. Let's see what happens. Mayo have Aidan O'Shea that could potentially be causing.
Taking into account that Mayo lost the game and underperformed, right? And from early on in that game, it was fairly obvious that they were going to be beaten, to be honest. I just think that this issue that you have of constantly running the ball, it's never going to be effective, particularly not against Dublin, because you're not going to outrun Dublin.
No.
They're just not going to do it.
No.
And so what they needed to do was try and mix it up a little bit. And even if that means you don't play this percentage, keep possession, poxy hand pass game, and then run it and then lose it anyway, you might as well get the ball to a certain point and bomb the ball in towards the danger zone with players around it. Get bodies in there. Like, if you had Reap, Andy Moore and Aidan O'Shea, two or three guys up there, I mean, if the ball is going in and they're competing hard for it, it's not going to be a clean catch, which means the ball is landing. It's a breaking ball situation in the danger zone.
And you want to say, want a minimum of four of them in either half.
Yeah.
And let's see what we get off them. Like, it's not the... Like, again, you're only losing it in the other team's full back line. Yeah. It's not a high-risk strategy.
In almost all the games I've watched this year, the goal opportunities have come from either a mishit shot, a shot that doesn't get to the goals, or a sort of an aimless punt in there. It's never from what you'd call good attacking play.
No.
It's just the ball getting in there. Galway's goal yesterday.
Yeah.
Sure, that was a shot for a point that dropped in the square and was competed for.
Yeah.
If he doesn't take that shot on and bloody hand passes the ball back, Galway lose the game anyway.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? So,
but
like,
anything
it's pointless.
They're all afraid.
The players seem to be afraid. They're totally... I don't know whether it's just that they're totally brainwashed that possession is everything. It's not. Getting scores on the board is everything, and the more often you get the ball into the danger zone and allow your forwards even to compete for the ball. I mean, Mayo weren't able to break the line by running.
No.
So the ball had to be kicked, so it had to go in there.
So here's my point. You've Aidan O'Shea maybe in there, drifting in there, you've Andy Moore and you've Reap, right? You get a good early ball in there now before Dublin are set with a defensive screen. You'd say that's a 50-50 chance of maybe winning the break off that. If Dublin have 12 inside the 45, what are the stats on getting through them there? They scored 3 from playing the whole game.
Yeah.
Well, like, I know which numbers I'm taking, and this is when you're the underdog. I'll take a 50-50 when you're the underdog any day of the week.
Mm.
Like, 50-50 really is fairy tale stuff for an underdog, because they're not supposed to get 50-50 on anything.
But the fact that they didn't kick it initially coming out of defence meant they never had that opportunity.
No.
They were never in the half forward line ready to kick it in with 3-on-3.
But even still, even if it's not 3-on-3, what always happens anyway is that the screen is always set up around the 45 metre line anyway. So there's ample space for the ball to be landed
over
in
that.
To drop into that. Now,
and with the offensive mark, it's unforgivable, because the whole idea behind the offensive mark is, instead of being outside that screen, there is that option of going over the screen and having a good fetch and the screen being irrelevant.
Yeah, well, look, we all accept the fact that when the ball goes in there, it's a, you know, you're not giving yourself a 90% chance of retaining possession, but it's not about retaining possession. It's about trying to create danger in the opposition's own. Like, that's
there
what people
go.
Are forgetting about.
Yeah,
it's not
are.
About ball retention. Sure, if you wanted ball retention, you wouldn't take a shot, would you? You'd never score and it'd be fucking nil-nil.
Yeah,
like,
it's true.
You have to get the ball into the danger zone.
At what point do you go from ball retention to attacking? And attacking comes with risks, right? Of maybe
correct.
Losing the ball. Like, it really is incredible where the way it's gone, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Well, it's considered good play now to just continually pass the ball to your teammate 5 yards sideways, backwards. But you can't score if you're passing the ball backwards. Like, I mean,
yeah.
It's just beyond belief. There are times when you have to work it and you're trying to create a space to pop the ball into or to break the line. But when you're playing against a team and you know you cannot break the line by carrying the ball, no matter how many times you recycle the ball over and back and left and right, you have to try and get the ball into the danger zone and create a contest for possession whereby when the ball hits the ground, it's a breaking ball scenario. And it doesn't matter whether you're a Dublin player, a Mayo player, a Carlow player, a Leitrim player, or a Meath player, a Leash player. Everybody has the chance of winning that breaking ball when it hits the ground by just going in for it and being aggressive on it. You win it in there, you should be able to get a shot off straight away and it's a score. Or you're going to be fouled, or you lose possession, but you're losing it high up the field and you can immediately get pressure on the ball because you have players in there.
That's the other thing for it. Like, if you do lose it in that full back line, you've got that full court press in there. Do you know what I mean? That's all in
but
there.
But the opposition have to go the full length of the field as
yeah.
well. I mean, it's
yeah.
worse. It's.
I just don't know why. Like, I mean, I don't want to be here saying that we're, you know, encouraging aimless balls in. We almost are here.
No,
at
but
not aimless.
No,
like,
when the running game isn't working.
When you
yeah,
can't
when
break the
yeah.
line. When, you, when
exactly.
it's fairly obvious you can't break. You're playing fucking Dublin. Like
yeah.
they have 8 men across. Like, you're not breaking
you
through.
You don't get through them. They're getting a hand on. They're so strong. Like, when Dublin are at that 12 back, just get it in. Take your chances and set up for
and
them.
And they have a weakness in the air in their full back line. Like, it's mind-boggling that this is not being
and
attempted.
Kerry showed it and got a goal off it in the first half. Kerry showed that getting these in there causes a bit of panic in there.
Mm.
And I can't understand how James Horan wouldn't have targeted that as well.
The other thing, it goes over, if the ball lands in the square, the Dublin halfbacks and players in that defensive zone, if they're tuned in, they're, again, running back towards their own goal to a breaking ball.
And we
ball.
Know what happens there.
But they can't see the man. If you're trying to mark a man, you can't mark a man who's running off your shoulder when you have your eyes on the ball running back
yeah.
running back in towards your own goal. So
yeah.
therefore, all these checked runs, like say Jack McCaffrey and Fionn McDonagh, he's checking his run, he has him tagged, ball goes over Jack McCaffrey's head and he has to turn and run back towards his own goal. He doesn't know where Fionn McDonagh is.
No.
Andy Moore, somebody wins it inside.
I throw it back out to him. Yeah, yeah, it does. It definitely mixes it up a bit because it just the whole match was Groundhog Day. It was like, ugh,
yeah.
Mayo aren't getting through here.
and that also takes away Dublin's biggest strength. Dublin wants, actually everybody in the world wants to turn the ball over on the 45 and then they go and attacking and breaking
yeah.
where they have 8 players and they just
that's
unleash
the optimal
them.
Area. Yeah,
yeah
that's
so
exactly.
you're negating that when you kick it in. Like,
yeah,
you know,
the risk of that.
That's where they want to turn it over. They don't care. Like you shouldn't care if they get it 5 yards out.
Yeah, and we saw Galway a lot yesterday with Kerry. The majority of their defending players are all around the 45. There was that gap over that. You know, maybe for a ball to Tommy Walsh, they gave one to Gavin O'Brien once as well. It went a bit too far, but at least Kerry looked to at least be a little bit aware
yeah,
of this.
Look, the thing is, it's difficult. Kicking the ball is one of the, it's the main skill in Gaelic football, but it's the hardest skill. So therefore, it's not always going to be perfect. So sometimes it won't work out. But the reality is, if this is a plan, if your inside forwards know that it's coming as well, they're going to be under. They have a much better chance of winning it. If it's a last resort and it's just lurried up in the air and it's pointless, yeah, maybe something comes up, but most of the time not. But if your forwards are alert and they know, okay, it's not working here, they can't break through the line, it's one pop back and then it's coming.
Diagonal ball,
yeah. They're on the front foot. They're
yeah.
going to win that ball probably 8 or 9 times out of 10 because they know it's coming, the defender doesn't.
Yeah, no, exactly. So it was Fionn McDonagh, just to finish up, two more things. Fionn McDonagh so scored a great point from play and all it did was piss Jack McCaffrey off because Jack McCaffrey went up, got fouled, then should have scored a goal and then scored a brilliant point from play. It was like, here, don't, dear young boy. And then Fionn McDonagh showed a little bit of an experience, tried to take Jack on for pace under the Cusack stand. And, well, like, that was only going to end up one way. Jack caught up with him for pace and dived on the ground and knocked it away. Like, I mean, so I'd say Phil McDonald will learn a lot probably from that experience. Last thing is Colm O'Rourke, who said last night, I just saw a headline of this, I just watched the hurling on League Sunday last night. So he said Keith Higgins is not really a good man marker. So there was some people complaining about this, saying that he wasn't. Now, I can see where Colm O'Rourke coming from. A lot of this is to do with perception, in my opinion. Now, Keith Higgins is just too good a footballer to be a man marker, so he's not seen as a good man marker. Whereas if Keith Higgins just marked his man and didn't really, wasn't as good outside of it, I think it does definitely influence people's perception of him being a man marker when there's so much more to his game than that. Now, having said that, Alan Brogan always liked marking him, yeah, and told me he liked marking him. So I do think there's something to it, that I don't think Higgins is that sticky. And if you have that flair about you, I don't think it's in your DNA to be as sticky as what you need to be if you're one of the doggers.
Yeah, well, I think the point that he's making there is that he's, at times, he's not that tight of a marker and he gets caught ball watching, and I would have to agree with that. I think what Higgins does is he's one of these lads who has, I think he's basically got a reputation as being a top class man marker because of one performance against James O'Donoghue in 2014.
Well, did O'Donoghue not roast him in Croker?
Exactly, he did. But he's getting it on the basis of the replay where he blocked him down a couple of times.
Right.
But James O'Donoghue won. Do you know what I mean? But James O'Donoghue won a sight ball out in front of him. It was just one of those days where they're a good matchup for each other. James O'Donoghue doesn't, like, James O'Donoghue's a very straightforward player. He basically puts the ball under his arm and runs, and Higgins has the pace to stay with him.
Right.
Like, he doesn't have, he's not a player who jinks and does sidesteps in front of you, like a la what Costello did at the weekend, where he jinked him a couple of times and went by him. We played against Mayo in All-Ireland quarter final, I think, one year, and Higgins got a roasting off David Bray, who scored about 1-5 off him, and that was David Bray's first season at intercounty level. So it's just about matchups. I wouldn't have considered Keith Higgins to be a fantastic man marker after that game.
Yeah.
But I've seen him put in magnificent performances. No doubt he's a brilliant footballer. But yeah, I think if you matched him up, like, he's never put on McManus, is he? It's probably always Harrison who's put on McManus.
Well, Harrison was put on Mannion, yeah. I don't think Mayo think he's their best man marker. So, like,
if you think about it over the years, like, they've brought Lee Keegan back in to mark guys. So, like, I think there's matchups that suit certain players, and maybe the like of a Costello isn't exactly a perfect match for somebody like Higgins, because he's a sort of elusive type of a player. And I think when Higgins gets stood up in a one-on-one situation, if it's a guy who's fairly straightforward and is going to try and outrun him, Higgins has the pace to stay with him, and he's got quick hands, he's brilliant on his feet, so he's going to make certain players look pretty bad. And pace out in front, if they don't have legs out in front, he's going to win that race.
Yeah.
So he's a brilliant match for some players. To say he's not a good man marker is probably a little bit harsh, but it wouldn't be the primary thing you'd focus on when it comes to Keith Higgins, I think.
All right, great stuff, lads. We might mention Dublin a little bit in performance of the weekend. Happiness hit her like a train on a
track. I don't really know Jim anymore. Me and him were like best friends when we played, you know. He's seen the light of Jesus, and I'm still like fighting the devil, you know. The dog days are over. The dog days are done. The horses are coming, so you better run. Run fast for your mother, run fast for your father. Run for your children, for your sisters and brothers.
Okay, so Paddy Power performance the weekend, and we said we'd give a mention to Dublin in this section. Tadhg O'Sullivan was brilliant. What a Ferrari of a player. Just the first game back after such an absence. We know he was with Kilmacud, but wasn't at 100% in that. And just to take Aidan O'Shea completely out of the game, like, I mean, I've marked him. He's just he has you all ends up because of his pace and his strength and his eagerness and acceptance of just happy to take somebody out of a game or man mark them. If he wants to play football, he'll play football. He has it every way. He has a football brain, and he has that instinct to put you in his pocket if he wants. He was outstanding. Cormac Costello was excellent again, 1-4. And, like, I mean, it's interesting, Dean Rock again on the subs bench. And at what point does this become a kick up the arse for Dean Rock, or at what point does Dean Rock say, Jesus, I could be actually dropped here? Because Cormac Costello was excellent. I thought the second time, was it Higgins he sold the second time for the for his goal? It was,
yeah, it was
Higgins,
yeah.
He burned. So like, I mean, I always find it interesting where you go one way and jink back, and then you go the other way, and defender's not expecting you to jink back exactly the same way the second time, and he did that, and Higgins fell for the hook, line and sinker. But often found that just a simple exact same thing twice can actually work. Isn't it a weird one?
Yeah, look, Costello's deadly though. Like, he's one of the, he's just an exciting kind of a player.
Yeah.
And he's much more exciting to watch than Dean Rock. Dean Rock is just too perfect, you know. He just does everything so by the book and so well.
He's never in a hurry, Dean Rock.
No.
Yeah, he's more such an 8 out of 10. He doesn't have any flair in him, really.
That's what
Dean,
I mean, yeah. Like, Costello has flair about him. Mannion has a bit of flair.
Yeah.
They're just kind of enjoyable to watch. But look, Dublin would be delighted. Look, O'Sullivan was very good. Costello, very, very good. Like, really good. Like, I mean, and getting game time into Kilkenny as well. Like, I mean, it's just everything worked out perfectly for Dublin.
The big guns back. Yeah. The big guns back, really. This is Dublin at taking the game as seriously as they wanted, and not just saying we'll take it seriously, actually being back fit, having their big guns back, and just blew Mayo out of the water. Arguably their best player on the night was Evan Comerford. Penalty save, brilliant. Aggressive kickouts, excellent. Fetching, excellent. Just completely composed. And it was a very, very rare tweet from him, Fitzmaurice, which caught my eye. He doesn't tweet all that often.
I was convinced it was a parody.
It wasn't. Yeah, I had to actually click on it to see, is this actually somebody pretending to be him, Fitzmaurice? Evan Comerford, Dublin's best player tonight, allowed Dublin do their thing with the quality of his kickouts and saved penalty. Now, this is a very interesting line in his tweet, and the most accurate. First time I've seen him playing like he feels like he belongs, rather than as the deputy getting a run out. And like, I mean, you couldn't have put it any better than that. And this, incidentally, was the first game Cluxton was back actually on the bench, and he got the number one jersey when Cluxton was available to get it.
And it would have been the easiest thing in the world just to bring Cluxton back in. Like, you've had 2 weeks break and you have Mayo, you have to win. It is Mayo, and there's, like, you know, Evan Comfort coming in after a bad game against Kerry. You know, it would have been so easy to just tell him to sit out, and he sort of really showed some mettle. Like, and he did. He owned the place on Saturday night, which is the first time I've seen him do that.
And we've criticised Jim Gavin for this exact thing. In that, why play Cluxton in all the league games? Give this chap a chance in front of Hill 16. Yeah. Remember specifically complaining about this last year, that you're not doing him any favours. And he's sticking with him this year. I don't know what's changed. Maybe he's thinking, maybe Cluxton's told him I have 2 years left. You know, like, we don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but definitely this year has been out of keeping with the last 6 years.
Yeah, it has been, yeah. But look, maybe Cluxton might have been on the bench, but maybe he's not fully there yet either. Just, he's obviously a good guy to have around the camp. So, look, Comerford probably is entitled to have the opportunity to bounce back from what was a mediocre enough performance against Kerry. But look, at the end of the day, he's a bloody goalkeeper. Like, my criticism of him the last day would have been that he didn't just put the ball out. It was too, you know, it was too safe playing the ball to the cornerback, too slow, not getting them up the field. The other day, look, going to be honest, like, he's getting a lot of praise, but he didn't do anything. Like, the penalty save was a good save. He was 2 yards off his line. It was a good save. And very impressive. So he's obviously a good goalkeeper, he's a good shot stopper, which he would have to be at that level. But the jury is very much still out on him when the pressure is on. There was absolutely no pressure on him the other day. I mean, he had oceans of room to hit all of his kickouts into, and he probably only hit one kickout that I thought was, that looked at and said, yeah, that's an impressive strike of the ball. When you compare him to even some of the kickouts that Began and Morgan were doing at the weekend in the other game, there's no comparison. Like, these guys have nothing to hit, like practically nothing to hit, and they are putting it on a lad's chest, you know, 7 or 8 times out of 10, whereas he has 40, 50 square metres of space and he was popping it into it. So I think that the praise of him at the weekend has probably been totally over the top. He had a very, very good performance, and it was good to see him bounce back from the bit of a wobble, we'd call it, against Kerry. Although I didn't really think he did too badly. Maybe he had one poor kick out, but he was, the one thing you would say about him was he looked like he was playing with more confidence. But of course he was playing with confidence, because he was under absolutely no pressure in the game they're cruising in.
Well, that's a fair comment. Like, it's like a corner forward just getting an ocean of ball.
Like, you're playing against Kerry the last day, you're under pressure, the team isn't going well, the game is in the melting pot, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
And he didn't really help his team progress in that match, whereas against Mayo, Everything was nice and easy and comfortable. There wasn't a hand been laid on anybody. The Dublin midfielders were 5 yards in front of their men. Ball popped out to them. Not difficult. So I'd say for me, because I have to stick to my guns on this one, the jury is very
give
much
him a break
out.
Give him a break, Ward. This is the anti-Dublin bias. Yeah. This is a Mead prick who won't give us any credit. Anti-Dublin bias.
And get them out of Croke Park as well.
All right, Conor Madden scored 2 goals for a Cavan. Martin Riley scored 1-3, so they definitely deserve a mention. Didn't see that they obviously beat their bogey team about time. They could never beat Roscommon. Jesus, from Division 4, the two of them all the way up in league finals and championship, and they can't beat them, and they beat them yesterday by 3 goals. Donal O'Hare scored a hat-trick, and his return to the Down team has definitely coincided with their upturn in fortunes. Kieran Corrigan scored 4 points. He was picked at wing back. I'm not sure if he was actually playing there for Fermanagh, but wouldn't be surprised that a wing back is their top scorer, knowing how the Black Death like to set up. We'll be a bit playful with Fermanagh with the Black Death. Peter Hart, lads, he's maligned on this show because, to be honest, which I've said it and I stand by it even now, his goal was sensational. His attempted chip for the goal was a beautiful thing as well. For me, that's what Peter Hart's capable of. For me, in the big games, we don't see that enough. And the reason I'm critical of him is because we know he's a brilliant player, but sometimes I hear Peter Hart mentioned in the same category as maybe a Kilkenny or maybe, you know, a David Moore and a Fenton, like the very top players in the game.
Are you looking at me here now when you're saying that?
Well, no. Well, I think you're understanding that he flatters to deceive a little bit in the very big games, that I'd love to see that in last year's All-Ireland final for Peter Hart, and then for him to be able to, or in the semi-final against Monaghan, both games he was anonymous. Like, he'll get a run through the qualifiers where he might do that. Maybe I'm being overly harsh to bring that conversation into this brilliant performance, but I'm just trying to maybe give a bit of context to why I criticise him. That's what he can do. Like, that goal was brilliant. Why are we not seeing that at the top level when Conor Callaghan does it in All-Ireland finals? Do you know what I mean? Because he does it. I don't see Peter Hart doing that.
Are you holding them to a different standard?
I'm holding them to the top level players, which I hear him being mentioned in. Now, I have him in the second level, who can be a top level player on a one-off basis, but can't do it consistently enough to be, you know what I mean, in that very top bracket.
Yeah, but is he not a bit different? Like, is he not like a middle third player where he has this little piece of genius and he gets through the lines very well and he, you know, creates these lovely moments that make people like me drool over? But, you know, I don't think he's going to be a Conor McManus where he wins ball and puts it over and scores 1-7 every game, like, you know, and yeah, dominate games that way.
But take a game by the scruff of the neck. A working wing forward can also take the game by the scruff of the neck. Like, Niall Scully can take the game by the scruff of the neck. Brian Howard can. Like, I mean, it's not, if you want to compare it to the top level players in those positions, I'll give you a few of them. He just happened to be playing full forward the other night and drifts in and out. That's why I'm comparing him to some of the goal scorers. But, like, yeah, there's very top level forwards that he can compare to that consistently do it more than he does.
Yeah, look, it's fair enough comment in that he maybe hasn't delivered his best in some of the really big games where they've been really tight, but oftentimes they've been in sort of dour enough games or in games where his team are quite up against it and there's not much of a platform. He's nearly having to do everything by himself. He came up trumps for them in Ulster finals in big games as well, kicking some fantastic scores. And I think he's been consistently one of Tyrone's top men for the last number of years, and I think he'd walk into the Dublin team. So I would rate him extremely highly, but it's very difficult for a guy who plays in the Tyrone forwards or is trying to provide an attacking impetus for Tyrone to do it on a consistent basis just by virtue of the way they play. Now, they played a lot better at the weekend and they moved the ball a lot quicker and there was more kicking from them at the weekend, which certainly helped.
And he stayed in full forward for most of the game.
He drifted in and out, but they had more of a physical presence because they had him. They had Peter Hart, they had Matty Donnelly, and they had Colin McShane that were kind of their three furthest players up the pitch most
really?
Often.
Right.
Which meant that they had the ability to kick from Morgan was coming out of his half back line and drilling ball forward on occasion to them. So that meant that they had that out ball, what you were saying, giving them a bit of a platform and causing Monaghan problems up front. Peter Hart was really, really good. A special mention as well for Conor McManus, who was absolutely ridiculously good as well at the weekend. I mean, he kicked 3 or 4 just phenomenal scores, and you'd I mean, where would Monaghan be without Conor McManus at the weekend? Absolutely nowhere.
Right.
Like they
so,
were.
So we're actually, that's interesting that they've moved two of the runners from the half forward line into the full forward line with Donnelly and Hart, yeah, and McShane, well, who comes out a lot. So, well, like, I mean, that would be a clear difference from Toronto. I'd be very interested in that because this is what we're trying to say.
Well,
on
what
the
we were saying was what I've said on a number of occasions that is that they need more of a physical presence up front.
Yeah,
and when you have Matty Donnelly, McShane and Hart up there, that's physical presence, it's power, it's pace, it's scoring ability, ability to break tackles. I mean, they'd be very hard to stop, the three of them in tandem, yeah, if they were able to give them a platform. Yeah. Now,
and Sludden has the pace to get up and support
Sludden,
them.
Sludden, McGeary, Myler came on. Like, they still, Tiernan McCann, they still do have legs in that middle third. Brian Kennedy played midfield for them for most of the game, and he was very good. I haven't seen much of him before, but he's a massive, massive man. He looked like he was well able to cover the ground as well. So, look, there's no doubt that there's... Tyrone have a lot of the right ingredients when they put it together. It's just that they haven't been putting it together so far this season, and that's always a concern, because when they don't play well and when they don't have those guys further up the pitch, they just tend to play this boring running game, and it kind of gets them nowhere against really top class opposition.
Yeah, okay, brilliant stuff. Rob Henley, 6 saves, so he's clearly James Horan's first choice ahead of Clark. I thought he was excellent. Obviously, without him, it would have been a humiliation for Mayo. There's no doubt about that. Some of the saves were really, really good. You know, and he's favoured for his variety of kick out over Clark, so he deserves a little bit of credit as well. Performance of the weekend, you've swayed me here, Keane. Evan Comerford was going to get it.
Even if you look at, say, the options that Henley had versus what Comerford had on kick outs, yeah, there's no comparison, and I think that Dublin and Mayo both won the same amount of their own kick outs.
Yeah.
Stand to be corrected on that, because I'm not a great stats man.
I didn't see those stats now. I'm going to give it to Peter Hart because he's been maligned on the show. I want to see more from Peter Hart. I just want to see that level of performance, and not all the time. That's impossible. And I do take your point. In the system he's in, it's difficult because you're meeting another wall. You're giving the other team a wall the other end usually. But at the same time, we have seen players in that he's done it. Like, I mean, yeah, if he does it against some teams and you say, well, it's difficult to the system he's playing in, it's the same system against one as it is, you know what I mean,
I think your criticism is not having performed brilliantly against Dublin is probably the main one. That's what kind of
was completely anonymous in that, and against Monaghan in the semi-final and the semi-final the year before against Dublin the year before. I know that, fair enough with Dublin, but like, I mean, Dublin are kind of outliers, but I don't know any of these big games. And I do take your point. In that Ulster final, he scored that absolute screamer at the end, but I don't remember him being unbelievable in that game outside.
Scored 3 in that second half.
Playing a brilliant diagonal ball as well. So maybe a second half in that. Anyways, look, listen.
Don't Peter let Hart, the truth get in the way of a good argument.
Peter Hart, just to show I don't have bias against you, you're getting your Paddy Power lucky pants. Right, that's all we have time for. We're back on Thursday. And we'll definitely have the loud manager, lads. We just have to try and track this fella down. Right, we'll talk to you then. Good luck.
Yet it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.